The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
We go to Athens for the latest on your Georgia Bulldogs. This is Bulldog Roundtable, exclusively on The Fan. Live from the Georgia's own Credit Union Studios at the Buttsmere Building in Athens.
25-20, fourth sideline, 15, 10, 5, get in there, touchdown!
This morning, The Fan staff brings you the latest on the Dogs.
As the only station in Atlanta that's live in Athens all year long.
Yes, indeed! That was too easy!
Bulldog Roundtable is proudly presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union. Find out how you can become one of Georgia's Own at georgiasown.org.
And that's going to be the ballgame. Georgia will win this ballgame.
Now, live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union studios in the Buttsmere Building in Athens, it's Chuck Dowdle on the Bulldog Roundtable.
On a foggy, a very gloomy Thursday morning here in the Classic City, but coming to you live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union Studios right here in the heartbeat of Dog Nation, it is indeed the Bulldog Roundtable. And a rough night last night on Rocky Top for our men's basketball team, fell behind 23, had a great rally, just didn't have enough time there on the clock and ended up losing by 8. But they'll be back in action on Saturday in Tuscaloosa, and that'll be a tough task against the only one loss in the conference, Alabama Crimson Tide basketball team. But this time of the year, we start to kind of like try to look ahead to what the NFL draft will look like, particularly as it pertains to a lot of the Georgia Bulldogs, but then just in general. And joining us this morning, and this may be a first because I understand this is an international call, but Oliver Hodgkinson, he's a NFL writer for the Pro Football Network. And Oliver, I understand you're calling from England. Is that correct?
Good morning, Chuck. Yeah, that's correct. It's a sunny day here, unlike you guys have got over there. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but I'm looking forward to talking some Bulldog football with you this morning.
Yeah, you're not on holiday. You're there.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, I'm based in the UK. Lived here all my life, but right for the Pro Football Network in the US. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to ask you. It brings up the question that a lot of Americans are paying close attention to, and that is the number of NFL games that are now being, and college games that are being scheduled in the UK, and just curious as to how that's taking hold, and if English football fans, which traditionally would be soccer, are they making the transition over to American football?
They certainly are, yeah. There's been a growing love for the NFL over the past few years in the UK. And as you mentioned, the college game is starting to grow over here. And we were supposed to have the Irish Classic in Dublin. We were supposed to have Notre Dame and Navy last August. But obviously, because of the global situation, we were deprived of that. We were supposed to have Nebraska against Illinois this August. But we'll wait and see how we get on with that.
Oliver, let me ask you about the upcoming NFL draft, and because I know you do spend time, paying close attention to what's going on with that. And yesterday there were a lot of the mock drafts, one in particular that's fairly popular in this country, and that is that it had the first four picks in the upcoming draft, starting with Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson going, of course, to Jacksonville. But it had the first four picks down through the Atlanta Falcons with Justin Fields going fourth, but all quarterbacks. Do you see that happening?
I think it's unlikely, personally. There's, as always, the sport, NFL, is a quarterback-driven league, and there's four really good quarterbacks, and beyond those four quarterbacks with Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance and Zach Wilson and Justin Fields, there's a big drop off then to the next tier. So there's a lot of quarterback needy teams in the NFL as well, but I don't see it. I see with the particular uncertainty over the draft this year, you've already seen the Detroit Lions and the Los Angeles Rams trading with Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff. I think free agency is going to be quite an interesting period. There's rumors about Carson Wentz, and that's really going to shape how the 2021 NFL draft stacks up.
And that's a former Bulldog in Matthew Stafford going out to L.A. And will that be a better scene for him and give him a better opportunity to advance in NFL playoffs?
Let's hope so, because Matthew Stafford is probably one of the most criminally underrated quarterbacks. And I'm not just saying this because it's a Georgia Bulldogs show, but he's been underused in Detroit. He's been underrated in the NFL for so long. And the Los Angeles Rams have got such a great defense as well. There's every potential that Matthew Stafford's a guy that can really drive that offense forward towards the Super Bowl next year.
Well, we're certainly going to be watching that very closely and got our fingers crossed. But now let me flip back to the draft again. There are a number of Georgia Bulldogs, that are eligible for this draft. One in particular that seems to be getting a lot of buzz, a guy that really won the hearts of Dog Nation, not only with his play this year, but the fact that he didn't opt out of the bowl game and then had three sacks, Azeez Ojulari. Do you see him as a first-round pick?
Yeah, I certainly do. And you make an excellent point with regards to the bowl game. A lot of NFL draft prospects will opt out of their final game of their college career to concentrate on the NFL draft. But Azeez Ojulari is a guy who he suited up in the Peach Bowl. He played his heart out. He had an outstanding game in that game. And he really rose to prominence in 2020. You know, we're talking about a guy who led the SEC in sacks. He was third in the nation in sacks. A guy that led the SEC in forced fumbles as well. He's explosive. He's got that pass rush mold that the NFL is careering towards. You know, guys that can bend off the edge. We're not looking at guys who strictly win with power now. We're looking at guys who can bend around the edge. And Azeez Ojulari is a guy who can do that. I did, you mentioned mock draft yourself, my latest mock draft for the Pro Football Network back in January. I had Ojulari going at 14 to the Minnesota Vikings. I know he's a popular pick for the Tennessee Titans at number 22 as well. So I definitely see him being a mid to early first round pick in a pass rush class that lacks the standout prospect like we've had in previous years. It hasn't got a Chase Young. It hasn't got a Nick Bosa or a Joey Bosa. There's a lot of guys who are in contention to be that first pass rusher taken, I think, come April.
Talking with Oliver Hodgkinson of the NFL, I'm sorry, the Pro Football Network. He's a writer for them. And Oliver, appreciate your time too this afternoon as it is in England. But let's continue to talk about Georgia players in the draft. And real quickly, you were covering that Senior Bowl, and there were guys, you were writing about guys that helped themselves. And one of those guys that you pointed out who really helped himself a lot, of course, was a defensive back from Georgia in Daniel. And I'm just curious as to what he did that made his stock rise down there. I'm talking about DJ, of course.
Yeah, of course. I think when you look at Georgia, that secondary this year with guys like Tyson Campbell and Eric Stokes, DJ Daniel, the third cornerback there, is kind of been overlooked in the season as part of the process. But he went down to Mobile and he performed really well on one-on-one drills. He looked sticky in coverage on 7-on-7. And he just grabbed the opportunity to almost emerge from the shadow of the two guys that he's been sat behind for his career at Georgia. I don't think he propels himself massively up draft boards with his performance, but he brings himself closer, I think, to some of those other guys, and particularly the Georgia guys that are in this NFL draft. You know, there's a lot of NFL draft eligible secondary players for Georgia, and I think Daniel helped bring himself closer to some of those guys.
Well, that's good to hear. He's a terrific young man, and certainly played extremely well here for Georgia. And as you mentioned, the Dogs have a number of DBs that are eligible, including, of course, Tyson Campbell. Let me ask you and take this back to where we started at the quarterback position, because even though he never played here, Georgia fans are paying close attention to what may happen to former Wake Forest quarterback who transferred to Georgia and then opted out, Jamie Newman. Is he going to fall into that second tier or lower of quarterbacks drafted in this upcoming draft?
I think Jamie Newman's a very difficult evaluation. He looked really good in his final season for Wake Forest in a number of respects. He showcased he's got a big arm. He's got that mobility. It's a very lazy comparison, but a lot of people liken him to Cam Newton in terms of his physique and his playing style. And I was really looking forward and excited to see Jamie Newman in Georgia this year. Before the season, I was hugely bought into the idea that the Bulldogs would challenge for the national championships with Jamie Newman under centre. And I think it was a disappointment that he didn't play this season. That's obviously impacted his NFL draft stock. And he didn't do anything out of the ordinary at the Senior Bowl either. If there was one quarterback that came out of the Senior Bowl well, I thought it was Mac Jones at Alabama. But Newman didn't. He showed flashes, but he didn't have that outstanding performance that you want to see from a guy who goes into the Senior Bowl and really elevates his stock. So I think you look at the first four guys, you look at Mac Jones maybe in a tier on his own, and then you've got guys like Davis Mills at Stanford. You've got guys like Kyle Trask out of Florida. There's a lot of quarterbacks that are in a little group altogether, and it's difficult really to separate themselves. And Newman had that opportunity to rise out of that group, and I don't think he grabbed it with both hands.
Well, it's certainly going to bear watching between now and April how this all shakes out. But, I do remember one NFL draft, and I'm a lot older than you are, but I can go back in the early 80s, and I remember there were seven quarterbacks taken in the first round. That it started with John Elway. It ended with Dan Marino in that seven quarterback grouping in the first round. And, I thought that was unusual, but to see mock drafts coming out now with a possibility of four going very high, is going to certainly bear watching here as we head toward the NFL draft. And Oliver, I got to tell you, thank you so much for your time this afternoon over in England. I appreciate you calling in and talking to us and giving us your inside expertise on how the Georgia Bulldogs may shake out here in this upcoming draft. We appreciate your time. Oliver Hodgkinson, he's with the Pro Football Network here on the Bulldog Roundtable. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to head down on the plains and find out what's going on at Auburn. That's next.
The only Atlanta station broadcasting live from Athens all year long.
This is Bulldog Roundtable on The Fan.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
It's Bulldog Roundtable with Chuck Dowdle, live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union Studios in the Buttsmere Center in Athens, on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Well, welcome to the internationally famous Bulldog Roundtable, but I'd love to hear from Oliver Hodgkinson. He covers the NFL, obviously, covering for Pro Football Network, but located, based in England, and that was a most entertaining conversation with him. But let's turn our attention now back to the SEC, football-related particularly, and let's talk about the Auburn Tigers. They've had some changes in the offseason, that's for sure, and nobody knows it any better than Jason Caldwell. He covers Auburn for the AUTigers.com. And Jason, appreciate your time this morning, and just give me a sense of where Tiger Nation stands right now with all the changes that have taken place, and are they happy?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck, for having me. Yeah, I'm as far from an Englishman as you can get, so hopefully everybody will be able to get recognized here. But yeah, it's been a crazy time when you think about coaching changes and the way things happen nowadays. Probably the biggest thing to get used to for people is making a coaching change now is much different than it was even 4 or 5 years ago because of the early signing period. Nowadays, most of the top prospects sign in December. You make a coaching change, there's not a whole lot of big-time guys left on the board for a new staff to jump on. So you just kind of have to get what you can get and move on. But I think for the most part, people have been pretty excited about Brian Harsin and his staff, the guys he's brought on. Obviously, you know, Derek Mason's a guy that people are familiar with. Obviously, Mike Bobo is a guy that Georgia fans are very familiar with and what he's done as a player and a coach. So I think for the most part, people are excited about it because it's kind of, you know, there's a couple of Auburn ties, but it's also kind of a fresh start. And sometimes that's what you need, even though it wasn't bad under Gus Malzahn. But after a while, and it was kind of a continuation of Gene Chizik before that. So it's kind of a fresh start, even back to almost 2009.
What do you think finally caused the change? What was the turning point that just finally pushed it over the edge?
I think it was probably a combination of things. I think probably a combination of the inconsistency in the middle tier games to me, there's no question that maybe the biggest thing was the inability to do anything against Georgia other than just a couple of games. I mean, other than two games against Georgia, the inability to even really score many points against Georgia was a sticking point for a lot of old school Auburn fans who, you know how it is for the old school Auburn fans, that Auburn-Georgia rivalry is every bit as important as Auburn-Alabama. And so for them, the inability to do anything against Georgia was big. I think, you know, the losses that, you know, didn't win at LSU. Matter of fact, didn't beat any of those three on the road. Georgia, Alabama, LSU, not one win against those teams on the road. And to win and compete, you got to do that away from home. And you know, they played Alabama as well as anybody, maybe better than anybody under Gus Malzahn. But you got to do more than that. And not one time did they win a bowl game following a win over Alabama. So it was kind of like, oh, beat Alabama, and then that was it. So it was a combination, I think, of things. But in the end, I think it was a success against your three big rivals.
Well, I mean, certainly Gus got off to a great start. In fact, I remember, after the famous kick six against Alabama, and I remember seeing a TV report from Auburn the next morning with a very famous ESPN personality who does radio out of Birmingham, and I think you know who I mean. But I remember him saying, yesterday I thought that Nick Saban was the greatest football coach, in the country. He said, this morning I'm not convinced that he's the best football coach in the state of Alabama. So you had Gus Malzahn at that level at that point, and it ends up, you know, a few years later, with a change being made. And I'm sure that there had to be some tough points there for your new AD there, Alan Green.
Yeah, obviously it's tough when you have to make a decision like that, knowing that how much money's involved. That's the biggest thing you have to weigh, and you have to weigh that in other sports, especially during this time of year. But I think in the end, you have to look at future and down the road. And you know, Auburn just recently, officially. A $90 million football only facility, which will be, beginning soon. They've already started the groundwork and had already started it. So you're talking about kind of taking the next step for the program. And sometimes you have to to, you know, in terms of maybe financially take a step back to take a step forward. So I think that was one of the things. And I meant to mention too that we know Lifeblood is recruiting, you've got to be able to recruit. And for Auburn, they've done a really good job of recruiting, with the exception of one very key position on the offensive line. And you look at the importance of that position. All you got to do is look at the two most consistent programs in this league, Alabama and Georgia, and what they've done on the offensive lines. Look at the Super Bowl the other night. How you got to be able to play the off to score and to score points like you want to in this league. It starts up front. No matter all the other, you can have everybody else you want to. In the end, the lack of recruiting on the offensive line for a guy that was an offensive guy was one of the big deals.
Well, bringing Brian Harsin in, you know, coming in, of course, from Boise State and having played out there, I was just concerned. Was there a feeling that, look, he needed to get a staff that knew how to recruit the Southeast? Particularly, you get a guy like Mike Bobo. Look, he knows South Georgia, that's for sure, and that's a very rich area, very fertile area of college football talent.
Yeah, I think getting guys that are familiar was definitely you know, something that went into play there. I think he understood that. You know, I think for Brian Harsin, in the end, I think like most people, if you can coach football, you can coach it anywhere. Nick Saban didn't have a history before he came to LSU and started. He didn't have a history in the Southeastern Conference. Urban Meyer didn't have one before he went to Florida. But you get a couple of key guys that did, and to build some relationships. And that'll be the challenge for this staff right now, is without those visits, without the ability to go to high schools, without the ability for kids to come to you, building those relationships without those visits is going to be one of the challenges even heading into this 2022 class and beyond right now.
Well, Jason, I appreciate your time this morning. I know that spring will be critical having a spring practice and a spring game for Auburn. That will be extremely important. So that'll bear watching here to see how we progress through this pandemic. And we are all hoping, you know, here in Georgia, we're hoping that there's going to be a G-Day game on April 17th. So I know that the same is true for those down there on the plains.
Absolutely. When you talk about, you know, installing not only new offensive systems, but a new way of life, you do a lot of that in right now in the workouts and doing the things they've done. So I think getting through a season like we were able to do has given them a blueprint to be able to get through spring practices. And so, yeah, I think like everybody, I think you're hoping to get those spring practices in to kind of get a footing as you head into a new season.
Jason, can't thank you enough for your time this morning. Jason Caldwell covers the Auburn Tigers for AUTigers.com. Appreciate his time. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, turn our attention to basketball, and talk with Adam Spencer. He covers SEC basketball for Saturday Down South. That's next.
This is the official sports talk station of the Dogs.
It's Bulldog Roundtable on The Fan.
Hi, this is Vince Dooley, and you're listening to the Georgia Bulldog Roundtable on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, 680 The Fan. Now on FM at 93.7. Go Dogs!
Oh, appreciate the legendary coach Vince Dooley welcoming us back to the Bulldog Roundtable, and joined now by Adam Spencer, who covers SEC basketball for Saturday Down South. And Adam, I got to tell you, we had a rough night last night up on Rocky Top. We fell behind 23 and dug such a deep hole, just didn't quite have enough energy to get all the way out of that hole, although did come back against the Vols, the 16th-ranked Vols last night, and just the first loss that we'd had in our last four games.
Yeah, I liked the way that the press looked late in that game. You know, they were really confusing and just disrupting what Tennessee was trying to do and making it difficult for them to get across half court even. So, I mean, that's something that they should keep in their back pocket going forward. But you're right, they just dug themselves too big of a hole, and then they're not the three-point shooting team that can come back when they're shooting like they were last night. I mean, when you have, you know, Justin Kyer going 0 for 5 from 3 and Sevier not knocking down any threes, then you're going to struggle a little bit, and that's what happened. But I thought it was a good effort, but this is a team that needs a little bit more than good efforts if they're going to get in the tournament picture.
Yeah, and we've got that situation coming up on Saturday that is going to be a huge challenge. But again, you know, you look at that too as an opportunity going over to Tuscaloosa and facing Alabama. And let me just kind of get you to give me a broader picture of the SEC. Is it fair to say that despite all that's going on, even with the pandemic and with games being canceled or postponed or all the things that we're having to deal with right now, that the story in the SEC this year is not the success of Alabama, but it's the failure of Kentucky?
I think they're both big stories. And yeah, I think on a national scale, though, you're absolutely right, because when people think of SEC basketball, they think of Kentucky. And to see them at 5-13 and, you know, when a team like Georgia or a team like Arkansas or anybody beats Kentucky, it's not the resume building win that it used to be. And that's a problem for some of these teams that are, you know, looking for these wins to pad their resumes and, you know, impress the selection committee. So, yeah, 5-13. I mean, this team, this Wildcats team is just so young and they're just so bad late in games. I mean, you saw the pass that they had when on that last second attempt to beat Arkansas. It's like, what could that have possibly been, even if it worked to perfection? Like, that wasn't going to win them the game. So I don't know what's going on there in Lexington, but yeah, that is outside of the SEC. I think that that is the biggest story inside the SEC, though. I think that a lot of people are impressed with what Nate Oates has done with this Alabama team.
Oh, and you know, those folks that sit up there at Rupp Arena and Big Blue Nation, you know, they all have their applications in to be assistant coaches across the country. So you know that they're not fooled when they see a play like that. They are really, you know, over the top upset, and there have been situations where this Kentucky team just can't seem to close out anybody. They were up 6 on us with 2 to play, and we go on a 7-0 run and win the game.
Yeah, that's been the story all year, even dating back to non-conference play. Like, you can see the talent is there at times. Olivier Sarr, he's shown now that he has a 3-point shot, and that's something that they've got to use more going forward. But then, yeah, they get like these 2-point leads late in games. They'll be leading by 6 with like 2 minutes left, like you said, and then they'll just start playing a different game. It's like they just tighten up and they just forget how to do the basic fundamentals of basketball. I mean, that pass from Sarr to I think he was trying to get it to Devin Askew or somebody the other night, and it was just like, that was just, you could see that on TV coming from a mile away. Like, the Arkansas player Devontae Davis, he telegraphed that. He was running from the free throw line and just Sarr never saw him. And it's just, those are the kinds of unforgivable mistakes that young teams make that cost them games. And it's just weird to see that from a team with this much talent and this many 5-star freshmen.
You know, I have to ask you, normally at this time of year, we'd be talking to you about, you know, how many do you think the SEC will get into the tournament? You know, who do you think it'll be? What will Georgia need to do to get into the conversation? It's hard to have that conversation when we're not sure what tomorrow brings, particularly on this SEC schedule, when we see like Georgia having to pivot on Sunday from a game that they were supposed to be in College Station, Texas last night playing the Aggies, and instead they're in Knoxville playing the 16th-ranked Vols.
Yeah, this has been a weird year, and, you know, I'm just glad that they were able to get a game in at all. Obviously, you know, Georgia would probably have rather played a team like Texas A&M leading up to the Alabama game on Saturday than a tough team like Tennessee, but just that's the way that it goes this year. And, you know, it's better to have that midweek game than to have no game at all. So yeah, it's been weird. And, you know, now what are they going to do with Florida and Texas A&M moving forward? I mean, South Carolina still has a lot of games to make up. You know, Mizzou still has a couple games to make up. It's just going to be interesting because, you know, I just really thought that there should have been a little bit more flexibility built into the schedule. And, you know, maybe you move the Final Four back a week and just everything back in the NCAA tournament a week. But
that would have given more time for some makeup games.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that just going into the season, like, you could have seen this coming a little bit more if you're a schedule maker. So, yeah, it's been weird. And, you know, I just hope that they don't, you know, super load everything up in the last week of the season to exhaust these guys before the SEC tournament, because I don't want anything to you know, hurt the quality of play that we have going into the SEC tournament, because it could be a really good tournament with anybody capable of really making a run, even a team like South Carolina that has talent when it plays
no doubt.
Can't stay on the floor.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Adam. This is the quality of play has been good. I've thoroughly enjoyed the games we've been able to watch that have been able to take place, and I totally agree with you there. But Adam Spencer, a writer for Saturday Down South, covers SEC basketball. Appreciate your time, my friend, as always, and we'll try to catch up with you again, hopefully around SEC tournament time. In the meantime, to all of you in the Bulldog Nation, thanks for being with us this gloomy Thursday morning. We got a big weekend coming up, so let's have a great Bulldog weekend, everybody.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.